Now, I suppose you all know how ordinary television works.
You photograph something.
Sure, I do. You photograph something, then the photograph is split up into millions of tiny pieces, and they go whizzing through the air down to your TV set where they're all put together again in the right order.
You should open your mouth a little wider when you speak.
This is Mike TV episode 18, in which we will be covering AMC's Preacher, season 4, episode 8, entitled Fear the Lord. My name is Lisa, and joining me is my co-host Dean. Hi, Dean.
Hey, Lisa. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Do you fear the Lord? Are you ready for this episode?
I know not to look at him, that's for sure.
Definitely not in the eye, not in the eye. So you're quickly before we jump into this episode, overall thoughts. I have to say, I am loving how this is, you know, coming to a close. I'm loving how we're nearing the finish line. This episode was possibly one of my all-time favorites and quite possibly one of the most disturbing and disgusting episodes to date. What do you think?
Yeah, another great example of Preacher just ping-ponging back and forth between absolute hilarity and then awesome action, or in this case, a lot of maiming and gore. But yeah, it's just, the way they balance the humor without making it over corny is just fantastic.
Wow, and the effects. Okay, for real, like how did they pull this off with standards and practices? How did they get away with this episode? I just don't know. I'm sorry. Nudity is nudity. So whether you steampunk it up or whatever, it's nudity. This was crazy. This was some insane stuff, especially with Hair Star. So that's where I'd love to start in the recap. I kind of have this broken out by character arcs until we get to the end. So let's kind of talk about Hair Star up until, you know, the end point. Because I loved this cold opening, freaked out, jumped out of my chair. Opens up with this kind of like blurry scene, and you don't really know what's happening, and a faucet's being turned on, and you hear some voices talking about how, oh, it works. And as the scene kind of pans out, you see that faucet is now Hair Star's prosthetic penis. And that was a crazy reveal. Crazy. What did you think of that?
Yeah, I...
obviously, you know, let's not dive into the, you know, mechanics of it.
Definitely, yeah, definitely takes taking a leak to a whole new level there.
All right, then we get probably the funniest and silliest flashback, but also important for, you know, context of the story. But we get a flashback to 1979, and it's clearly in Germany because we hear a young boy, whom we learn later is named Dieter, singing a German version of My Way.
And you thought that, did you think that was Star at first?
I did, yeah. I did.
And I love the reveal when...
I will never laugh so hard. Pip Torrens. I would love to interview Pip Torrens. I want, you know, all the Radio Labyrinth people. All right, I'm going to just go off on a tear here. With the exception of Jeff, who's awesome, but Steph and Tim are behind on Preacher. And they refuse to talk about it because they don't want to be spoiled. And all I have told them is that it's just crazy good. And this right. is insane shit happening here. So I would love it if we could somehow get, if Radio Labyrinth, if they were current, they would be all over trying to get Pip Torrens interview. It would be, how cool would it be for them to interview him? But I would love to hear his reaction to reading the script and learning that he was going to have to do a nude scene, essentially, with a faucet for a penis. And then furthermore, he was also going to have to do this scene back in 1979 where he has a little Dutch boy haircut and wears a little crazy sailor outfit and is meant to look like a little boy. I love the gag that they went for here. It was great.
Yeah, and his acting, the way that he just plays it, he, you know, he does every now and then do a couple little silly things, but he plays everything so straight, even mm-hmm. though he is in the most ridiculous situations out of almost anyone in the whole show. He probably has the most ridiculous situations occurring to him. Mm, and he just does such a good job of being playing it so straight as he does it.
So, all right, let's paint the picture here. So, yes, so the boys, after Dieter is finished, they are all lined up, and the announcement of Little Mr. Dusseldorf competition and the winner for the fourth year in a row is young Klaus Starr. And I did like that we learned his first name was Klaus, and perhaps we already knew that. I've been laughing this whole time. I've been laughing this whole time about Jesse and God calling him Klaus, and I thought that was like mockingly... But I guess that actually is his first name, so they weren't really mocking him. I guess they were, you know, not showing their respect to him by calling him Klaus, but whatever. Anyway, so yes, here's all these young boys lined up in a row, and at the end, the reveal is full-grown Pip Torrens dressed like a little boy and playing it like he is a little boy. Later, he's in a bathroom and looking at himself in the mirror. And the other boys charge in. They're angry. They start to torture him. Dieter says, I love Star congratulates. He says, Dieter, congratulations on Mr. Congeniality. You know, like it's like, you know, you didn't quite get there, but you got some consolation prize. And the boys hold him down. Dieter pulls out a knife and says, you're always a star, but where would you be without your looks? And they cut out his eye and draw that star scar on his eye. So we now have the origin story on how Star lost that eye. And I loved it. That was wonderful. Then Star wakes up screaming, my eye! And then looks down, sees his faucet penis, and says, my genitals! And we are introduced to the Chunt brothers. Loved these guys. Would have liked to have seen more of them, Chunt. But alas, just this little cameo here with the Chunts. Introduce themselves. I don't have all their names, but let's just say they are maybe one step on the rung above cavemen.
Yeah.
And perhaps the one that only grunted was at the cavemen level. But anyway, they remark on what a fine spigot they've crafted. And then they start to feed him a bowl of very disgusting looking food, and they say they're going to help put some meat on those bones. Star starts to get very weepy. He says it's been so long since anyone has shown him any kindness at all. And then he looks over to the fireplace and on a spit sees that one of his legs is on the spit and looks down and sees that, yes, indeed, his right leg is missing. Then he goes, of course, from being, you know, humbled to their kind care and spigot design to angrily exclaiming, you're eating me? I mean, this was very comedic. You're eating me? And then, you know, they're just like, yeah, we gave you first plate, you know, come on.
It's delicious. I like that they're mad that he's ungrateful. Like,
yes. And he starts telling them to stop eating me, stop it. He just gets really mad, and then he starts saying, you know, how powerful he is, and that what they don't realize is that his location is being broadcast by a subdermal transponder, and they were about to be destroyed, but they continue to eat. And they say, oh, it's just in time. Your blood pressure's up. It's just in time for thigh time. And they're just about to extract the rest of his leg when Featherstone and the Grail bust in and rescue him. And Star, the best scene right before we get the opening credits is, well, it's not the best scene. There's so many in this episode, but a great scene. Star just crying like a baby as Featherstone is carrying him, you know, not back to Basada, as I have in my notes, but back to their vehicles to get to Basada. But she's just kind of walking through the desert carrying him, and it's a great scene. Great, great face acting. Julianne Emery is clearly disturbed and saddened and distraught, and Hairstar is just curled up like a baby in her arms. I loved it.
Yeah, we finally see Hairstar broken. He's never really shown that kind of emotion before.
Very broken. They both really are, you know. Yeah. It would have been nice to see a, you know, little more tenderness, I think, between the two of them, but alas, it's not meant to be. All right, later, back at the Grail, we see Hitler is still trying to convince Jesus that he should be the Messiah. The conversation, of course, with between these two is very funny, as it always is. Jesus says he feels like he's overstepping, and Hitler says, you know, Hitler says, you know, there comes a time in your life when you simply have to do the right thing. I know this from experience.
Yeah.
Then Hairstar enters with his squeaky prosthetic leg. And Hitler offers his condolences for the suicide of the Christ child. You know, there. This is from when Hitler shot the Humperdinck
right.
in the last episode. Hitler's now trying to gloss over that and, you know, call it a suicide. But Star sits down, tells him to cut the crap. They've lost. There's no Messiah, no dance, no apocalypse. It's over. And Hitler says, no, but we have Jesus of Nazareth, the original accept no substitute. And then Star disdainfully says, well, you know, we wouldn't be in this mess if he hadn't been caught whoring around. And Jesus tries to defend himself and say, that was 2,000 years ago, and she wasn't a whore. And then Hitler brings out the beatbox, and Jesus starts to break dance to Run DMC's It's Tricky. And the best part of that whole scene was Hitler kind of bopping in the background and clapping to the dance, into the beat from the sidelines, you know, kind of cheering Jesus on. It was so funny. So I was laughing my ass off. Star, however, not laughing. He's quite unimpressed. His statement to them is, save your ghetto gyrations for someone whose dick doesn't require constant descaling. Ugh. I don't even know what that means exactly.
I assume what it means, because here's what I think. My Keurig tells me every several weeks that it's time for descaling, so I think it's like cleaning out the inside of the faucet probably because of all the gunk that gets built up. Yeah, it's gross. So you think, Jesus just has this hidden talent, or do you, because I kind of wish we would have seen a montage of Hitler teaching him how to break dance.
I think Jesus probably has many, many talents, you know, so most likely, you know, it was inert. I agree. Hitler most likely trained him and probably said, we need a more modern dance for these folks as opposed to the soft shoe. What do you have in mind? And, you know, Jesus may have come up with the break dancing, thinking it was more modern. It was hilarious, though. It was really, really well done. Really good. I loved the head spinning.
Yes.
The levitated head spinning. All right. Now we're going to talk about a very, very, very disturbing moment in this show's history.
God. Yeah.
On my second watch, I actually contemplated not watching this again. I actually thought, I'm going to have to turn away. I don't know I can watch it again, but I did. All right, here we are. Hairstar is alone and naked. And this is where, I'm sorry, I mean, it doesn't offend me, but I am shocked and amazed that this got passed. Standards and practices. I really am, because he is naked full on, except no genitalia, just a faucet. I guess that's how they got away with it. Anyway, well, he's not completely naked, okay? He is wearing his 1979 little Dusseldorf sash. And of course, he's wearing his nipple rings. Just when you'd forgotten about those nipple rings, I loved it. That was great. Great callback. He's drinking straight from a bottle. He's clearly very depressed. He stands up at a table and begins to throw his sash over a beam from the ceiling and tie a knot. And we know he is trying to hang himself. However, this turns into what I'm calling probably the worst botched hanging job ever in the history of ever. The sash is somehow tucked behind his nipple ring. And as the hanging, the knot comes loose, and so it doesn't quite hang him, but it's still holding on just long enough to pull those nipple rings just enough so that his oh God, I can't even say it, his actual nipples rip off his chest as he falls to the ground and left dangling from the ceiling beam, his stash, nipple chains, and two nipples. And the hair star has now lost more body parts by his own doing. It was horrible. And he's lying there on the ground with this bloody chest, two bloody holes in his chest.
I think my my wife walked in like right as this was about to happen. And I think so
she doesn't watch the show.
No, and even she like she walks in as he's hanging himself and she kind of looks and then that happens and she's just like, "Oh my God."
I talked to my mom about it the next day and she goes, "Oh, I'll just, you know what? I'm just going to be glad when this show is over." I was like, "Why? You didn't like the faucet penis and the nipple rip?" And she was like, "No, I did not like either of those things."
Yeah, it was gross.
Very gross. All right. So, you know, and as he's on the ground, a nice little touch to this also is that he's also pissed out of the faucet because there is this little yellow pile of liquid and it's still kind of streaming out as he's lying there crying from his failed hanging job. And we see in the reflection of piss is how we see God enter the scene. And he walks into the room and he bends over Star and he says, "Oh, Klaus, I thought you wanted to be beautiful again." And Star is just crying and he's so pathetic. And God takes Star's head in his hands and he says, "If you bring the Messiah home, I'll give you your looks back." So, all right, the mission has been set forth and, you know, God has made a legit promise here, hopefully. Any more to say on Hair Star? We're going to leave him there until we get to the end and we're going to move on to Jesse next. But do you have any other...
Does God at all care about Air Star? Like, why does he need him? Why doesn't he just go save Humperdew?
That's a really good question.
Humperdew.
So I think God just enjoys testing people, really. I mean, because you're right. Why does God even give a damn about any of it except for he wants the people to move into places to cause this apocalypse? He wants to see the apocalypse brought about and have his third creation, if that's even true. If what Jesus or what Jesse's being told in hell by Fiore is even true.
Right.
Or Fiore. That's a good question. I just think that God just likes toying with people and seeing them do his bidding. So Jesse is still refusing to sit on the throne of God. He tells Fiore he's fine reliving the day his dad died over and over. Because as we know, in hell, you relive your worst day over and over. He says he's been living that day every day of his life anyway. So bring on your little film strip. And Fiore tells him the film strip portion is over. And throughout the rest of this episode, mostly, is all Jesse torture scenes.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got this in my notes. It's first he's tortured with ants. And I love God. If we're going to see Hair Star nude, by God, we must see, or if we're going to see Pip Torrens nude, we must get an obligatory Dominic Cooper nude shot, which I totally did not mind. But you know, it was tastefully crafted where,
well, I mean, there's still ants going up his butt. So yes. I don't know how tasteful that is, but
so it was a tube of ants slowly crawling up his butt while he's in a cage, and they're crawling all over him. So they're not just up. The tubes seem to be connected to his butt, the ants did seem to be outside as well, but horrible still. And he was tied up, so he couldn't shoo the ants off of him. So that is a horrible torture. Then we see a brief torture scene with him just being on fire, running around on fire. So more torture.
Yeah, classic hell torture.
Sure. Then he's, you know, stuck in a barrel with rats, which he does break free from. And he's, you know, bound and tied while he was in that barrel too. So he's just lying on the ground from the broken barrel. and we hear gunshots blasting outside of his cell. And in enters the Saint. Oh my gosh, the Saint. He's here to rescue Jesse. Hooray. And this is when I start to remember, oh yes, the Saint knows how to escape hell. It's all going to work out. And even then we see them riding on horseback. And I'm like, yep, yep, here they go. They're leaving hell. We get a nice scene of, you know, finally some giving the actor who plays the Saint some actual speaking lines. Graham McTavish, excuse me for not knowing his name. At night, they're camped out and they're talking, they're speaking by a fire. The Saint starts to tell Jesse a story about this drunk general who got caught reading his map sideways. And as a result, all of his men were marched into an ambush. And he then admits that he was the general. And Jesse realizes the Saint sure is talking a lot more than he ever really has. And then Jesse says, and where did you get that horse? And then the Saint and Jesse hear a bunch of screaming and wailing in the background. And the Saint says, you hear that, Jesse? That's what's coming for you if you don't sit on that throne. Wah, wah, wah. It was all a trick. Again, they got us. They got us again, Dean.
Yeah, I thought for sure he was there to save him. I mean, it seemed like it made sense. It was putting the pieces where they needed to be. But yeah, it's a good, nice little way to trick him too.
Mm-hmm. So next they're back in the throne room and Fiora's standing there again. This time, instead of having a bunch of angel troops behind him, they're all demon troops. I love that touch. Fiora tells Jesse to stop mucking about. And Jesse says, you know, God is testing my faith, and this is part of his plan, and there has to be something more here. Fiora says, of course there's more. There's all kinds of torture, like whips and molten lava spread over your buttocks like a cream biscuit. Jesse says, what? And Fiora explains, you know, it's like a cracker, and they're kind of having this exchange. And Fiora says, you know what? It doesn't matter. And then I love the line. Jesse says, Jesus, Fiora, those speedballs have turned you into a dick.
Yeah.
And then Jesse gets all close and defiant and says, you know what? Do what you have to. I like biscuits. And that's when Fiora's had enough. He orders the demon troops to force Jesse onto the throne. We then are brought back to the outback, and we hear God's voice say, Jesse, live. And next we see Jesse climbing out of a shallow grave in the Australian outback. He is, we could go to Tulip and Cassidy, but let's just keep going with Jesse. So before we talk about Jesse's encounter with God here in the outback, any more to say on the torture scenes or the Saint and Jesse, the trickaroo?
No, but I kept thinking that this wasn't going to actually be God. I just assumed this was another trick, which Jesse thinks for a while too, but it just seemed that was, I guess, the one. If I had one complaint about this episode, it did seem like just suddenly random that God, or
why would God just suddenly choose to bring him back? Do you think it was he needed Jesse to actually physically put his butt on that throne in order to bring him back to life? Because it's almost like Fiora was instrumental. It's like he was just, he couldn't say, hey, Jesse, God will bring you back to life if you sit on the throne. Right. But somehow Fiora had to get Jesse on that throne in order to bring him back to life.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's like, I don't know. Maybe, like, I was trying to think of it, it seemed almost like maybe he was being resurrected, kind of like Jesus. You'd think, you know, there's the connection there.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you know what? I just thought of something. The other day, last week, I asked you about the coffee cup, and I remembered what was on it. It was Lazarus coffee, which makes sense. Oh, Jesse rising from the dead.
Yes.
But yeah, it did seem weird that just it's almost like God's like, all right, you've learned your lesson in hell now. Come back and let me finish you off.
Yeah, it seemed to be tied with Jesse physically being on the throne, in my mind. It seemed to be tied to that, but I don't know how or why. Maybe I'm wrong. Anyway, so Jesse's walking through the outback. He sees I should say at this point, we know from the Cassidy and Tulip scenes that we'll get to later that we know Jesse's been buried for at least 3 months.
Right.
So he looks pretty good for that. And all I keep thinking is give him some water. Like, he looks incredibly thirsty to me. Anyway, he sees off in the distance a big RV driving, and the RV's pulling a motorcycle on the back of it. All I had to see was that RV and motorcycle to know who was driving.
Right.
As Jesse starts to wave for the RV to come to him, and as it approaches, he sees God is driving it. I do love the scene from the back of the RV. The back license plate of the motorcycle is Godspeed without the E's. That was a great touch. God comes out of the RV. He tells Jesse, it's not a trick. You're not in hell. I really did bring you back. And at that point, I believed him.
Right.
So I did think it was a trick, sort of. When God did that, I believed him. This angelic music swells, and Jesse says, "I did it. I refused. He throws himself down on his knees in front of God. He says, you know, they tried everything they could. They burnt me. They tortured me. I refused." He hugs God and he says, "My whole life was a test and I passed, right?" And he says, "Now you don't have to end the world because I passed." And God says, "You came so close." And the music fades. I loved this moment. And Jesse says, "Are you serious? I didn't forsake you. I didn't sit on the throne." And God's waggling his finger and says, "Yeah, but you wanted to." He says, "You sinned in your heart, Jesse. Is that not serious?" Jesse says, "You're going to end the world because I was tempted?" And at this point, he's really getting angry. And he says, "You're making it sound like there was no way to pass this test." You know, and he's kind of in God's face, just staring at him defiantly. And God says, "I gave mankind free will. Your choices were your own, and so are the consequences." Jesse says, "But you made us this way." And God says, "I made you in my own image, and a little thanks would be nice." And Jesse's very angry at this point, and he says, "Thank you for what? For kids with cancer? For the Kardashians?" That's kind of a throwaway line, but it was funny. And then God begins to choke him and is very threatening and says, "This is how your father raised you, to look your Lord right in the eye." And then he leans over and in a very horrifying manner bites out Jesse's right eye and then turns and spits it on the ground. What did you think of this scene before we continue?
It's a little overboard.
We knew it was coming.
You could have just punched him or choked him and thrown him on the ground, but we're just hell. He could have just gouged his eye out with his thumb even, but to bite it out, yikes.
I loved the touch afterwards. He spits the eyeball out. He's still got a bloody beard and he's just, this is angry God here, right? And also, he's enjoying it a little too much still, I think, because he leans over Jesse and he says, "Don't despair. You've still got a little part to play before it's all said and done. And I'll see you at the apocalypse. And don't forget to bring your friends."
Right.
And then he claps his hand. There's a bunch of thunder and the world starts to spin. And like the screen just kind of turns upside down. Mm-hmm. And I presume this was God's doing. I said, this is where Jesse is transported from Australia to the Middle East, a la God. This is more transportation.
Quick. I just figured Jesse eventually found the Grail shortcut to get over.
Yeah, he found Hairstar's shortcut from one set to the, to the next. All right. So Jesse lives and now has one eye. On to, the happy family of Cassidy, Tulip, and Humphrey Do. This would be a show I would watch. Anyway, it starts with Cassidy, Tulip, and Humphrey Do are driving. They're in a downpour. Of course, we left the last episode with them driving away. They're in a downpour. Cassidy is remarking how the rain is very Old Testament-like. Tulip says, yeah, let's find out. She pulls over the car. She pulls Humperdew out of the car. In the pouring rain, she's holding a gun to his head, and she yells for God to come out and face us, you sack of shit. And then the rain clears. Then we get a 3 months later title card, and we see Tulip, Cassidy, and Humperdew have been living, I guess, as a little happy family in a cabin. Presumably, they're in the Middle East. Like, they're close to Masada, I would guess, at this point, right?
Or yeah.
It
definitely, I got strong Oliver and Melanie vibes.
Yes.
With their little cabin in the woods.
Yay, we got our Legion reference in. Yep. Good
especially,
job.
And especially Cassidy taking Humperdew out. Like, I know they're not getting trashed, but they're picking up the twigs and pine cones and stuff. So.
Yes, that is the best scene. So it opens with Tulip sitting there, and in walk Cassidy and Humperdew, and they've got firewood and pine cones. And Cassidy is speaking to Humperdew like he's a little adorable child. And he says, look, we've been gathering pine cones. This is daddy pine cone and mommy pine cone. And what's this one? And Humperdew
so pine cone.
He's so excited. And that's when Tulip says, okay, Humperdew, come here. And she brings him over for, I guess, his daily inspection of his. We see that his chest is armed with C4. Mm-hmm. She asks Cassidy about the detonator. He says, yes, he changed the batteries this morning. And then they practice their to the moon drill, which is all they have to do is tell Humperdew to the moon. And he thinks God is coming and is very excited and runs out into the yard and climbs into a refrigerator that they have crafted with a window so that he can look out and they can see his face as they blow him up.
Yeah, right.
So they are fully prepared. And they've also spent these 3 months wisely training Humperdew and are completely ready to destroy him once God appears. Now, little did they suspect that they would also be slowly becoming to care for him greatly over right. this course. Like they did not, that did not even occur to them apparently. Anyway, later there's a great scene. They lost Humperdew in the woods and they're looking for him. And Cassidy tells Tulip, you know, I only turned my back for a minute because I had to pee. And Tulip says, well, you should have just taken him with you. And Cassidy says, well, I don't like having him watch. He thinks I want to play. They find Humperdew in the woods and he's petting some baby deer. And Cassidy is just so delighted and keeps telling him how biblical that was. That was biblical, dude. That was biblical. And then Cassidy very sweetly starts scolding Humperdew. Because Humperdew says dog,
right.
And Cassidy says, yeah, sure, it was a dog. Listen, we're going to have to check you for ticks now. And Humperdew's like responses, these little moans and delightful sighs, they're just so, they're perfect. I know we have said it so many times, but Tyson Ritter, spot on, just so great. And there's another Preacher podcast I was listening to that was so funny. They were saying, I bet there are people that watch this show that don't realize it's the same actor playing Humperdew and Jesus. Now, surely none of our listeners, like they're all of our listeners are too smart, but I'm just going to throw it out there. That's the same actor that plays Jesus that plays Humperdew. Doing a great job. Great.
I was surprised. I didn't realize, and I don't know why, the name kind of sounded familiar, but I'd forgotten that he was the lead singer of All American Rejects.
Oh, well, I'm not familiar. I've heard of the band, but I'm not familiar with the music, so I wouldn't know that. But that's interesting. So maybe he does have some cool breakdance moves.
He might, yeah.
All right. So the Grail moves in to capture Humperdew. Now, this is where our stories are starting to converge between Hairstar and the Grail. Mm-hmm. So I am to assume that how did they know where Jesse, God tells Star where they are, right? It has to be.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I can't remember if that happened on screen, like in just a one liner when he was holding Star's head and telling him he'd restore his looks. Did he say, you know, they're in a cabin nearby? I think he did. Right.
I feel like there was something where it's pointed out where they were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, so the Grail is moving in to capture Humperdew. They drop from airplanes. We see Featherstone and Star emerge first. They're decked out in their Grail gear. And then we see some Grail operatives trailing behind them with a very curious, large, strange, like satellite disc looking thing. I thought, what the hell is that? So more to come on that disc. Then we get a delightful dinner scene. It's one of Tulip's special meals. Remember, she has cooked some crazy meals in the past before. Cassidy's always disgusted by them and is hilarious on how he always, this is another kind of like running gag throughout the whole series where, you know, Cassidy will comment on the strangeness of the food and Tulip always acts like, yeah, of course. Just like, you know, why wouldn't you? This time it's blueberry hamburgers. And Cassidy, I love Cassidy's remark. He says, oh, look, Hump here sure loves it. And we can really see Tulip is softening toward him. She looks at Humperdew eating the burger and she says, yeah, he does, doesn't he? Then the puke-a-rama begins. So right as they are enjoying Humperdew, enjoying his blueberry hamburger, he then pukes it all over the table. To which Cassidy starts to puke. Now, I am not a fan of a lot of puking. It was funny, but it was gross, disgusting. Tulip gets up from the table because puke everywhere. Who would want to keep sitting there? She looks out the window, and there's that disc there, and we see on the disc it is called the Sonic Nauseator. And so she knows this is the Grail closing in on the house, and she turns and tells Humperdew it's time to go to the moon. So he immediately runs out and gets in the refrigerator. And then we see Featherstone run in and say to Tulip, hi, Marnie, which was great. Yep. And Tulip is hands on hips, starts to say, I'm so sick of, and is interrupted by her own puking, which she pukes all over Featherstone. I love the puking is the exclamation to her beginning sentence, I'm so sick. You know, it's like, anyway, that was good writing there. But she pukes all over. There's a quick line where Featherstone asks Star for permission to kill her, but Cassidy runs in, slips and falls in the puke. Anything funnier than someone slipping and falling in the puke, right? Unless
it's hilarious.
Slipping and falling in guts and gore from the Allfather.
Oh, God, yeah.
That's probably the only other episode I'd put up there as high in the disgusting level as this
yes.
one. This one's just so gross. Anyway, gross in a way that I loved, of course. I'm not saying gross bad. Gross good. So Star demands to know where is the child, and they leave to retrieve him from the yard. Tulip tells Cassidy to do it, and, you know, Cassidy has the detonator, but then says he just can't do it. He can't kill him. So Tulip says, give it to me. I'll do it. And Cassidy refuses to give her the detonator. And she says, I'll take it from you. And he starts to say, you know, with all due respect, I'm a vampire. You know, you're just a little 5 foot nothing. And she picks up a huge axe and plunges it into his heart and takes Whack. The detonator away from him straight away.
I did not see that coming.
No.
And even when she picked up the axe, I was like, oh, she's just going to like chop his hand off or something. I didn't expect her to
put right her in the
his
heart.
Chest.
And I really thought she was going to blow up Humperdew. She is, you know, by this point, she is still on her mission. But when she gets to the window, detonator in hand, she sees Humperdew looking out of the refrigerator and his
to the moon.
Sweet little moon. Face. Yeah, and he's just saying to the moon, and he's so excited. And the Grail are, instead of just opening the refrigerator and pulling him out,
yeah, right.
the Grail are assembling, ropes to the refrigerator to just lift him away. And she realizes, I guess, that she can't do it either. And she watches them escape. And she does eventually hit the detonator, but it doesn't even go off. So they have failed. Humperdew is gone. She sits down next to Cassidy, still has the axe in his heart. It's a very disturbing image. She apologizes, and he says, you know, that's all right, but it sure is going to be a bitch to pull it out. And then Cassidy asks, what do we do now? And she says, what else? We have to go get him. And Cassidy questions to save him or to kill him. And we don't really get an answer to that. But next, they're in a car, and I'm sure they're in back in Tulip's car, and I'm sure they are headed to Masada.
Yep.
All right, our final scenes here, Dean.
Bum, 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 bum.
A quick scene at Masada. The Grail is wildly applauding for their all-father who's up on a stage. His looks are fully restored. What a handsome, handsome man, comely man he is. Because he has successfully rescued Humperdoo, God has made good on his word. And Star announces in front of all of the happy Grail minions, at long last, the apocalypse has, and from a crowd, the man says, an air date? And Star says, that's right, an air date. And from the side, Jesus and Hitler clap reluctantly. I like the air date. I like how they're punctuating this season with, like, finally these final episodes have air dates on TV. It's just a really nice meta conversation there. All right, then quick scene. A man is playing a guitar in a prison. And a bunch of his inmates come along and just shiv him and run off screaming, Clapton is God.
I don't know why, but that made me laugh. So, like, I think I laughed harder there than I did the puke scene and anything. Like, it's so random.
It was. I was like, what are we doing here? There's a funny bit over the intercom, and we hear an Australian accent, so we know that we are in an Australian prison. And the man over the intercom is saying, all pedophiles, the next dispensary is now open. All pedophiles, the next dispensary is now open. And in walks Eugene. And he asks this dead man first, are you okay? Then he looks up and yells to the other men who have run off, what the heck, guys? And then he very curiously leans over and picks up the guitar that the man was playing. Now, we've talked about how Eugene's storyline ends up in the comics, right?
No.
So, maybe we have. Maybe we haven't on recording. So, if anybody doesn't want to be spoiled on Eugene with two episodes to go, skip ahead 10 seconds. But in the comic, Eugene becomes a rock star and becomes very famous. So, I am really thinking this is a nod, a wink and a nod to that. And I do think we're going to get a little hint of Eugene kind of living his dream as this singer. And the funny thing in the comic book was that when he would sing, it would still be the word bubbles right. Of the just the fluff or nothing that you couldn't understand. Yeah. But the crowd was just going wild. Everybody was just going crazy for him. So... And I can't remember if it was the word, Jesse's word that did it, or if it was God that somehow granted that to him, or it was just Eugene's turn of fate right. And good luck that brought it about. I can't remember. But anyway, the guitar was a nice wink and a nod to that. Final scene. At the hotel room at the Holy Bar and Grail, we relive the scene from the first episode of the season where Tulip and Cassidy are in that hotel room. And so we were correct in thinking they were in the Middle East was mm-hmm. when that was happening, yep. when they're talking about how it sounds like the end of the world outside. The interesting spin here is that they're actually sad about Humperdoo, whereas right. The first time around, we thought they were sad about Jesse.
Well, Tulip, they're still fighting, aren't they? Because I swear, like, there's like a, it shows like a flash, like when Tulip's looking out, like there's like one of those light flashes where I assumed the demon and the angel are still fighting.
Oh, yeah. That's what that was. Yeah. Good one. Excellent. I think you're exactly right. Good. Tulip does say, so your guy can get us in, right? And Cassidy says, yeah. And she says, that's good. That's kind of how the scene opens. And I wonder if they are speaking of Effendi.
Which means maybe we will get a fun scene of them going to try to excuse us, like stop the fight, walking over piles upon piles of dead bodies.
Of themselves.
Yeah.
I would love that. I think we'll probably find that out, of course, in the next episode. Anyway, it's a shortened version of that same joke that Cassidy told in the first episode, and it also does end with them kissing, just like in the first episode. Only now, the next scene, they're waking up in bed together. It's the next morning. There is definitely this brief moment of real happiness on Cassidy's face the next morning. It is, Tulip gets up to go to the bathroom and Cassidy's just laying there. And again, Joseph Gilgan just does this great job with just showing real contentment and happiness on his face. I don't think we've ever seen it the entire span of this show.
Right.
So, you know, like he's finally with the woman he loves. They've got some closure. It's been several months now, you know, since Jesse, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, there's a knock on the door. Cassidy gets up to answer it, and it's Jesse! Oh, my God! And he's sporting this great bandana eye patch, or it's that he eye patch he assembled from a bandana. He walks into the room, announces that he's back. Tulip runs out and embraces him. And in the back of the room, we see Cassidy scoffs. I can't tell if that's a happy or a sad or mad. Cassidy is.
I think it was almost like, I think he's happy that Jesse's there, but it is almost the, he realizes that of course I can't be, you know, it's just, of course, this is what's going to happen. Right when I thought I'd get what I want, then of course fate's going to just stick it to me again. So he never truly can be happy. Even when he's about to have everything, it all just has to end. And it almost seemed like he was accepting that, kind of just like, well, you know, it's what it is what it is.
So two episodes left, Dean. Overture is the title of the next one. Jesse, Tulip, and Cassidy mount one final assault on Masada as the apocalypse review begins. R-E-V-U-E. That's episode 9. And then, of course, episode 10 is called The End of the World, or End of the World. So Overture and End of the World. It's not sounding like it's going to have a very happy ending.
I don't know. It could be, they could stop it, or we could find out that at the very end, God just like is like, oh, just kidding. It was all a test. It's like, you were cool.
All right, so let's have a couple of predictions here. Will we actually see this third creation that God is making?
Yes, and I almost feel like what I hope it is that it's just something that when everyone sees it, they're just like, really? Like maybe he's really proud of it, but then everyone else is like, what? This is stupid. And
but who would everybody else be? They're not going to have a say in it, right?
Well, I was kind of hoping maybe he unleashes it before the world ends.
Okay, let's do a death draft. Or are there any other predictions we need to make? Jesse, Tulip, Cassidy. Will any of them end up together? Will any of them end up dead?
I still think Jesse and Tulip end up together.
Agree.
Even though all this season it's been pushing the other way.
Mm-hmm.
But I still just think they'll end up together. I can see Cassidy sacrificing himself.
Yeah.
Kind of like how Jesse actually sacrificed himself in the last episode or two episodes ago out of the plane. Mm-hmm. But I can see Cassidy doing it this time.
Yeah. I can see Cassidy dying. I think that's the only closure we're going to get. How else are they going to put closure on that?
Right.
Will we see resolve with Humperdoo, Jesus, Hitler, Star, the Grail? What's going to happen with these
folks? I kind of think we're going to see I don't know if it'll be a full assembly, but I could see like an assembled team of Jesse, Tulip, Cassidy, the Saint, and Humperdoo, Jesus, and Hitler all against God and the Grail. Like, I want to see that group of people slow-mo walking up a hall, like with a bunch of guns in hand or something like that. I think that'd be a fantastic scene.
We're not going to get epic battle Game of Thrones style.
Oh, no. I think the battles in Preacher are way better than Game of Thrones.
Well, they're different.
Oh, well.
But what I'm saying is, I agree. There has to be a clear line in the sand of the sides, right?
Yeah.
sides have to be taken. Yeah, I like that.
I think we definitely will get, if not in both episodes, we're going to get like a 10-minute long fight scene or sure. gun or shoot off or something like that.
Will we see Featherstone proclaim her true and undying love for Hairstar?
Maybe like right before one of them dies.
Or both.
Yeah.
What's going to happen with Genesis? Will we see God go back to heaven and Genesis go back to his rightful spot? It's curious that Jesse didn't use Genesis during any of that encounter with God.
Yeah, I just don't know if he thought he could, maybe.
Probably couldn't.
I kind of kept waiting for him, especially when he was getting choked, to try to use it. And God kind of laughing him off. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Will we see Eugene become a rock star? Will we see any more of Eugene? Could you think that could have been Eugene's ending? Pick up the guitar and that was how they leave it for the fans?
If they did that, I think casual viewers who don't know the material might mm-hmm. kind of ask questions, but I think any comic person would actually accept that as the ending for Eugene. Mm-hmm.
Just that he's in prison. But see, now if Jesse's alive, what if, could there be a beat in two episodes to go where Jesse says, I left him in hell, I'm not going to leave him in prison?
He may not have any clue if he's in prison.
True.
Because for all he knows, he shot him and ran off. He didn't know he got arrested or turned himself in, basically.
That's true.
So I don't know.
Unless Tulip and Cassidy could tell him.
Yeah, but I mean, do you think that's something they're going to think about?
Eugene's not top of mind with them.
Right.
Oh, well, I am very excited. This episode has me pumped. Two episodes to go. I'm on the Preacher bandwagon. I don't want to see it end, but I'm also ready and super excited.
You think this will end with somebody killing God? Is God going to die in this?
I do think yes. Who do you think will do it? The saint?
I feel like he's the only one who has the weapon that can do it if he was able to kill the devil.
There'd be a nice spin if it was Tulip. If somehow Tulip got a hold of the saint's guns and it was her, because she's been...
Because he's been kind of like, I mean, again, there has been a running the past two seasons of him, you know, finding her when they were in Louisiana a couple times. And so there is like a weird connection with mm-hmm. that.
So I won't give the ultimate spoiler from the comic of what happens with all of them until the show has ended. So I'll save that till the end and see how it compares to the comic. But yes, I think God is going to die. I think honestly, it's probably going to happen in the next episode. I think somehow episode 10 has got to be kind of a wrap up of the characters. Like the battle's got to come to some sort of a conclusion in the next episode. And then 10 has got to be a wrap up of the characters and also some sort of finality with Genesis. Mm-hmm. So it can't all be wedged into 10. The battle at Masada's got to go down. In 9, right?
Is in the comics, is Genesis like the main beat of the comic? Because I just feel like, I don't feel like it's an important thing. Like, I don't feel like they're, to me, I never even think about Genesis being a thing. I know it's a power, but I never mm-hmm. think of it as having, like, needing some kind of closure, except, like, Jesse loses the power for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, that would be the closure. I mean, Genesis is an entity, and it is a thing, and it's not...
But they haven't talked about that at all since the very, like, since the middle of the first season.
What do you mean, talked about it?
I mean, they never remind you that, like, oh, yeah, I don't forget this power. Like, they just refer to it as, like, a power, and or they say Genesis, but they don't, you know, they've never talked about...
Well, remember on the show, we still have to get the official reveal that Effendi and that demon woman are Genesis's parents.
Right.
So I do think somehow they're going to have to loop back in and maybe those two in an effort to rescue Genesis or somehow they're going to be the Chekhov's gun that comes in. Gotcha. And, you know, that's my assumption. I mean, that's not how it went in the comics at all. But I think that somehow they're going to have to tie that in.
Yeah, we'll see.
And Genesis is an important factor in the comics in the fact that, yeah, it gives Jesse this power that other humans don't have. But there is still this struggle to get that power away from him and get it back up into heaven's care where it was, you know, being, I guess, somewhat held against its will.
Right.
I don't know.
I guess we'll see.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Well, now that we've made some predictions, any other things that you can think of that we want to predict?
Nah, I say we just see what happens.
Will Hitler die? Will Hitler die?
I could see Hitler easily having some kind of... I almost feel like it wouldn't surprise me if Hitler almost seems like he's completely about to turn around and become a good guy, and then right as he does, like right as it seems like they're, oh my God, are they going to redeem Hitler? Like he just gets randomly shot or something like that. Or
right. He doesn't deserve to be the ruler of hell. I mean, you know, he's Hitler, crying out loud. But but I love him, and I don't want him to die. Is that terrible? This right. Hitler's just great. Will Humperdew die?
No, I think Humperdew lives. I think Humperdew.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think knowing what Humperdew is and the fact that he's kind of like this, while childlike and tenderhearted, he's still kind of an abomination. I feel like he kind of has to die.
Yeah, I don't know. I still think if God dies, Jesus ends up being the God, and then Humperdew's the Jesus because it's the Father and the Son.
They all just get to move up in ranks.
Yeah, yeah. It's like North Korea.
Hair star and dead for sure, right?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Featherstone?
Probably dead.
Yeah. Oh. Okay. Well, Dean, this has been a blast,
as always.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you. Thank you for going through this Preacher journey here in this final season. Two more to go. We shall see what next week brings. Give everybody our Twitter handles, please, sir.
All right. Find the show on Twitter at MikeTV1. And you can find me at Rockdale_Tiger there as well. Let us know what you think about Preacher or any other TV you want to chat about, or send us suggestions of other things you might want us to discuss on the show as we do in Preacher here in a couple of weeks. We are going to be mainly covering American Horror Story 1984, but we are kind of hoping maybe we can, you know, throw a couple chunks of chat about just what other shows are going on, because there's going to be a lot of stuff starting to come out here in the fall. So if you got something that you want us to check out or at least make sure we're mentioning, please let us know so that we can adhere to your demands. Other than that, we're glad you're with us.
Yes, some shows coming up actually that I don't know that we're not going to cover episode by episode, but I would definitely love to hear discussion around them. Of course, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is coming back. I'll be excited to talk about that. Do you watch that, Dean?
I randomly watch it. Okay. Like whenever it's one of those shows that I've never stayed constant on, but whenever I have 30 minutes to kill, I will just go like Russian roulette though thing and find an episode that I haven't seen before and watch it. So,
well, last season was great. So if this season is anything like last season, I'm very, very excited for it. And South Park is coming back. I can't wait for that. Of course, American Horror Story, we're going to be covering that. Mr. Robot returns very soon for its fourth and final season. I know you've mentioned you're going to get caught up on that show. I hope you do. I know you're not making any promises, but anybody who wants to talk about Mr. Robot with Mike TV, let us know. I'm all in on Mr. Robot and would love to hear your comments about it. Of course, Watchmen has an air date October 20th on HBO, 31 days till that as we record this. Castle Rock also returns on Hulu. I love, love, love that show. So interested in talking about that. Silicon Valley coming back in a little over a month, as is Rick and Morty. So, and then also finally his Dark Materials got a release date. Also, I think it's November 1st or 2nd, somewhere in there on HBO. And I'm excited about that too. So lots of shows coming up in the next couple of weeks that we would love to hear from you on, or if you have some show recommendations for us. But those are the shows I will for sure be watching and very interested in speaking about. Yeah. And we will cover American Horror Story probably a couple episodes at a time. We're hoping Steph from Radio Labyrinth will also be joining us. And then after that, we are going to start episode by episode coverage of Watchmen, because comic book shows are our favorite genre, and Watchmen is going to be right up there. I know it's going to be great. It's just going to be fabulous.
I'm looking forward to it.
Me too. Well, Dean, thank you. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Bye.
Phase 2 is in place and awaits your command. Any sign of Custer?
Not yet. Eager for your revenge, Klaus? You wanted to cut
carve a vagina into Custer's head. That's right. Delightful piece of sadistic irony.
And my reward as well, my looks.